Welcome to the Hot Law Podcast, where we discuss the hot topics in today's news from the legal perspective. This podcast is brought to you by the Beaulieu Law Firm, PC. This podcast is not legal advice and is strictly for educational and entertainment purposes. For legal advice, visit the contact page at www.beaulieulawfirm.com.
Yes, welcome to the Hot Law Podcast. I am your host, Max Beaulieu. Thank you for joining us today. I am Max Beaulieu, the principal attorney of the Beaulieu Law Firm. If you need any advice in terms of your corporate to enter needs, visit me at www.beaulieulawfirm.com. That's www.beaulieulawfirm.com. All right, welcome to the show. We got a great show for you today. Got an interesting guest, but the topic is, and we're going to jump right into it, we'll be talking about bad owners of sports teams and how to get rid of them. Now, there's plenty of history of bad owners with controversial track records, and we're going to discuss these owners and the legality of both their conduct and removal and or termination of ownership and other league disciplines. To help me explain all of this, I have a guest who hosts the most popular YouTube channel catered to Knicks fans, and I think it's the best YouTube channel for sports for fans by the fans, CP of Knicks Fan TV. CP, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Max. Thanks for having me on. I hope you being safe out there during this time. And yeah, appreciate you bringing me on, man. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, man. Yeah, we're continuing to practice social distancing. I mean, as of last month, I've been home recording my podcast, trying to stay safe, but God has blessed us with technology to do the things that we still can do and still enjoy our passion. So happy to have you on the board. So CP, tell the world what you're about, what you're doing, and how did you come up with Knicks Fan TV? Like, what drove you to that platform and bringing out this great content?
Yeah, so the essence of Knicks Fan TV is really just giving the fans a hub, a community, to have their say, have their opinions heard about the team, cover the team in a bit more in-depth perspective than what you would typically get from an ESPN or a mainstream media outlet that, you know, may only cover the team at a higher level. With Knicks Fan TV, you're really digging deep and really giving the fans the coverage that they're looking for, giving them insight into all of the players, you know, prospects, free agency, you know, you name it. And we've had some great guests along the journey. We've had all of the major beat writers that cover the Knicks, from Mark Berman of the New York Post to Ian Begley of SNY. We've had Alan Hahn on from MSG Networks. You know, we've had former players on the show as well. We've had Chris Childs. We just had Charles Oakley on the show as well. So we're 3 years old. You know, we continue to grow. And it's just been an amazing journey. And I would say in times like these where there are no sports on, I feel like it's even more important and it's even more enhanced, you know, the community that we're building, because it gives people that outlet to kind of escape what's going on out there. And a lot of people have been impacted by this pandemic. So, right. You know, we definitely appreciate the value that we bring to the fans.
Absolutely. I loved your Charles Oakley and Chris Childs interview. You really seem to have a good rapport with a lot of these players. You know, they seem very open to you and to speak. So good job on that front.
And thanks.
No, absolutely. I know you're a big NBA fan, sports fan as a whole. So I want to talk to you a little about the Chicago Bulls Last Dance documentary. You know, it's quite fascinating to see the behind the scenes. You know, when we watch it, you know, when I was young, you know, I heard talks about them, about being some controversy and some, you know, kerfuffle between the players and management. But seeing the behind the scenes, you see all the details of what's going on and see the personalities and really the insecurity of some of these players and some of the struggles they have gone through. So it's pretty interesting so far. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting story, man. As a fan of the game, as a student of the game, you know, one of the dynasties of our game, you know, it's an inside look at the fall of a dynasty. And I think it's the first two episodes alone have been so well done, you know, in terms of really setting the stage. As you see, each personality starting to reveal themselves. Obviously, it's built around MJ, but obviously you saw, you know, the essence of Scottie Pippen, his beginnings and his humble beginnings, and, you know, what led to his contract issues with Jerry Krause, you know, going back to his home, you know, in supporting his father, his brother, who were wheelchair bound. And right. So when you saw that, the beginnings of his dispute and him essentially requesting a trade during that 97 season in what was to be the last season with that team being together. So I just think it's, you know, because back in the day we didn't have that that social media 24/7 cycle.
Right.
Where you didn't get that type of insight back in the day. So I think the fact that they allowed that camera crew to really track the team for that whole season, I think this thing, it's going to be a phenomenal documentary, man.
Absolutely. I've actually did some reading about, you know, because it's so interesting that we have all this in depth of the Chicago Bulls behind the scenes, but we're seeing it about over 20 years later. And I was like, how did this happen? Or did they actually film this documentary, or they pieced things together, but they actually had behind the scenes access? Yeah. And I think Adam Silver at the time was the attorney for NBA Entertainment, and knowing and getting understanding that this was the last season for Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls, he wanted to document it. But as we know, Michael Jordan is very particular about how his likeness is used. So Adam Silver had the insight, was like, we all know that Jordan might not sign off on having this documentary made, but we just need to capture it and give him full control. All right. And we'll let him know, like, hey, let's just capture the film that we could negotiate on the back end and let him have full control. And whenever he says we could release it, we'll release it. But the most important thing is we have the footage, because we'd rather just have the footage, negotiate later, than to not have the footage at all and then miss out on something that's potentially very magical. So that's a great job by Adam Silver. We could see why he rose through the ranks to become commissioner of the NBA, because that was really good insight. And now during this time, we're blessed with some very fantastic behind the scenes stuff. And yeah. MJ finally decided to release it.
Yeah. I think it's a fantastic look inside of who he was. You know, in episode one, they really take you back to profiling his family and his parents and the competitive spirit that he had with his brothers, and how that turned him into who he was, because he always wanted to kind of prove to his father that he was good enough, you know, or that he was worthy. And you know, taking you to the rejection that he faced in high school and not making the varsity team. And I just thought it was great, man. You got to see his meteoric rise at UNC, the final shot, the game-winning shot over Patrick Ewing and Georgetown. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just really, really well done so far. You know, and we're just two episodes in.
Yeah, I know. So I can't wait for Sunday. And, you know, Jordan has, I'm sure that the documentary would detail how Jordan has tortured so many fans and so many teams out there. And one of his favorite teams to torment is our beloved New York Knicks. And yes, and even when he came back with the Wizards, he still had to, you know, do his thing. So, and the reason why we're talking about the New York Knicks today is because the owner of the New York Knicks, for the past couple of years especially, has been involved in making headlines. And he's the owner of the Knicks, James Dolan. But on a side note, first and foremost, we are well aware of his COVID-19 issue. And we're very happy, and I think I could speak for CP, we're very happy that he's recovered from his symptoms, and it's very commendable he decided to donate his plasma, at least for the study, I believe, for the scientists. So hopefully we could find a cure or something to help fight this pandemic. So we're very happy about that. So I'm glad he's recovered, because, you know, we don't wish that on anybody. But regardless, he still is one labeled as one of the worst owners in sports. And we've been, as fans, going through a lot under his tenure. So I'm going to dive in and talk about James Dolan and talk about who he is and what his track record is with the Knicks. Now, in 1994, Paramount Communications was the owner of Madison Square Garden. And it was later acquired by Viacom. And then Viacom sold it to MSG properties to Cablevision, which had 50% of the ownership. And then later on, Cablevision became the full owner. In 1999, Dolan was given an increased role in managing Cablevision sports properties and many of the assets of MSG, which includes the Knicks, the Rangers, at the time, the WNBA's New York Liberty, and the American Hockey League's Hartford Wolfpack. As chairman of MSG, he supervised day-to-day operations of those professional sports teams and regional sport networks, which includes MSG Network and MSG Plus, and he serves as the governor or the owner of the Rangers and the Knicks. Now, during his tenure since 1999, the Knicks are 693 wins and 997 losses over the past 21 years. This is the worst record in the NBA during that span. CP, like, why don't you explain, like, what's been going on for the past two decades with the Knicks? Like, what are accomplishments? What are failures? And what's your temperature on the Knicks for these past 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's all gone downhill seemingly when James Dolan took the helm, man. And I think the number one thing you could really attribute it to is just mismanagement from the trading of Patrick Ewing up until now, where the Knicks look like they're truly in it for a true rebuild. I think it's been a lot of mismanagement. You know, James Dolan really put faith in the wrong executives to make decisions for this team, whether it was Scott Layden to Isaiah Thomas down to Steve Mills. Each tenure was wrought with trades that mortgage the future, unwise free agent signings, and you know, drafting. You know, some of the drafts were okay. I think Isaiah had a fairly decent draft in drafting David Lee, Nate Robinson, Channing Frye. I thought Isaiah, he also drafted Trevor Ariza. You know, I thought Isaiah had an eye for the draft, but then, you know, he made unwise trades. For example, the Stephon Marbury trade where he took on a ton of salary and gave away about two or three first-round picks. The Jamal Crawford trade was another one. The Eddie Curry trade was another one where picks were traded away. And so I think while Isaiah had good intentions, I thought he had a plan to bring in young, talented players. The pieces just never fit. You know, and is that on James Dolan? To a certain extent, because like I said, I think he stuck with Isaiah for a little bit too long.
Long, yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's just loyalty to the wrong executives. You know, Steve Mills, the same thing. You know, trading for Tim Hardaway Jr., giving Ron Baker you know, $4 million and a no trade clause, or signing Tim Hardaway Jr. to a big deal. You know, it just, they've never made the right decisions ever since trading away Patrick Ewing in 1999-2000.
Yeah, they should have let that contract expire and, you know, just rebuild from there. But I guess there was this notion that you couldn't rebuild in New York. I think the Celtics, you know, their fans didn't come out when they went through some kind of rebuild after the Larry Bird era. And so a lot of the media were like, you can't rebuild in New York. You can't rebuild in New York. And we've been kind of stuck on this treadmill. But
yeah. Well, see, the issue was that when they did trade Ewing and they took back Glenn Rice and Luke Longley in those deals, those guys were no longer the players that they were, and they were making a ton of money. I mean, they were ended up paying Luke Longley long after he had retired. He couldn't even play for the Knicks. He had a bad ankle injury. And the Knicks knew about it and still traded for him. So those are moves that you can't make. They then trade Glenn Rice for Shandon Anderson. They signed Howard Eisley, two underachieving role players that they had invested a lot of money in. You know, those moves can't be made. They signed Allen Houston to the six-year, $100 million contract.
Right.
You know, and ultimately the NBA amnesty rule is essentially made for this situation because He could never play out that contract with the arthritic knee.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, they bring in Donnie Walsh ultimately to clean up once Isaiah comes in and you know, makes his mess. They bring in Donnie Walsh to basically clean up the barn and to try to get under the cap to now sign LeBron James. You know, the summer of 2010 was one of the biggest free agent summers in the history of the NBA. It was LeBron. It was D. Wade. Chris Bosh was a free agent. Amari. Joe Johnson. And so once they struck out, it became mismanagement again because they tried to save face by bringing in Amari with no insurance on his knees.
Right.
They mortgaged the future to bring in Carmelo. Those two never meshed. Amari couldn't stay healthy. And so you have your two max contracts in an underachieving Melo and a Stoudemire who couldn't play.
That's pretty bleak, CP.
and there you have it. It's 20 years of taking one step forward and five steps back and trying to, you know, fix the mistakes of the previous regime or the next regime coming in. And so it's just been pretty brutal. But I think we're in a position now where I think, you know, the current regime is going to try to put a winning team that's committed to a rebuild or an expedited rebuild, should I say. Right. You know, still keeping their options open. And keeping the roster flexible, but also developing through the draft.
And hopefully that's the route they take. And you know, a lot of the, as you said, the ongoings of that's been hurting Dolan has been on the court and basketball operation issues, but there's also a lot of off the court issues that he's ran into that's been a problem. That seems to be a black eye, a little bit of a black eye for the league and for the Knicks. In 2007, Dolan was named as a defendant in a sexual harassment lawsuit by a former Knicks executive, Anuka Brown Sanders. And Sanders accused Dolan of firing her out of spite after she complained of sexual harassment from then general manager and president Isaiah Thomas. The court ruled in favor for Ms. Sanders, and Dolan had to pay $3 million of the $11 million settlement. And MSG, the company responsible to paying for the remainder of the settlement. You know, during my research, I didn't hear about this, but in February, you probably heard of it, CP. Mm-hmm. In February 2015, Dolan responded to a letter from a gentleman named Irving Berman. He's a 73-year-old lifelong Knicks fan, and the fan criticized Dolan's ownership of the Knicks and questioned his leadership with the seething end and questioned his leadership. And then Dolan responded in a very, very seething letter. And I'm going to read what he stated here. It's pretty short. In response, Dolan stated, "You are a sad person. Why would anybody write such a hateful letter? I'm just guessing, but I'll bet your life is a mess and you are a hateful mess. What have you done that anyone would consider positive or nice? I bet nothing. In fact, I bet you're a negative force in everyone who comes in contact with you. You most likely have made your family miserable, alcoholic maybe. I just celebrated my 21-year anniversary of sobriety. You should try it. Maybe it will help you become a better person that folks would like to have around. I mean, while start rooting for the Nets because the Knicks don't want you." Wow. So that was pretty. Did you hear about this at all?
Yeah, I did. I did. And, you know, going back to the Anuka Brown Sanders incident, certainly it was a black eye for the organization. And like I said, it just spoke to Dolan's, you know, loyalty to certain people. And that included Isaiah. And clearly that wasn't a situation that reflected well on either person. And he should have been cut ties with Isaiah at that point or even before that, because I'm sure, you know, these type of things, when these things happen, it's never not known. You know, this is clearly something that had been known and had been going on through the organization. And so I think Dolan should have stepped up and you know, took control of it before it escalated into a lawsuit and a sexual harassment case. I did know about the fan letter as well. And as you said, you know, the Oakley situation, you know, fans getting removed for chanting sell the team certainly hasn't reflected well on James Dolan from a public relations standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was my next point here. On February 9th, 2017, Charles Oakley, a Knicks legend, was removed from Madison Square Garden during a Knicks Clippers game following an altercation with MSG security. Now, you recently had an interview with Charles Oakley. Briefly, like, how did he feel about that situation? I think we all guessed on how he felt, but like, what were the takeaways you had from your interview with him regarding the issue between him and Dolan and the removal?
Well, it still stings, and you know, rightfully so, for a Knicks, a beloved Knick figure like Charles Oakley to be thrown out of Madison Square Garden in front of the people that used to cheer for you back in the 80s and 90s. That has to be something that hits your soul, hits your ego, and really hurts. But I, you know, as I said in the interview with Oak, there's three sides to the story. And so while he maintained innocence and just felt like he was unfairly targeted, I just don't see it that way. I think there's three sides to the story. I think he was probably provoking the situation. And I think where things went wrong was the escalation between him and security. I think both sides handled it poorly, and that's what led to the situation exploding in front of, you know, thousands of people to see. And it was an embarrassing and a terrible situation. But again, it reflects poorly on Dolan, who already has a bad track record in running the team, as well as off the court drama and incidents like the Sanders case and, you know, the earlier fan email. So it's terrible, terrible for the organization.
Yeah, it's a tough organization. As you stated, you know, there's been a lot of chants and a lot of calls at Dolan during games to sell the team. Spike Lee seems to have it out now for James Dolan, since the security refused to allow Spike Lee through his usual entrance. And it just seems to be a very tenuous situation for James Dolan. And with all the losing and controversy on and off the court, with the NBA's most valuable franchise, with the largest fan base in the NBA, is it plausible that the NBA can remove Dolan? Now, next we're going to examine instances where owners have been removed or distanced from their teams and see if there's any precedents that could be set out there to use against Dolan to remove him. Now, one of the key stories that's happened in the past decade that's closely related to this situation in terms of removing Dolan is the Donald Sterling situation with the LA Clippers. CP, could you tell me about your recall about this Clippers Donald Sterling demise and what happened a few years ago?
Yeah, well, certainly unprecedented. I mean, here you had it. An owner of this Clipper team for many, many years, and an established figure amongst the NBA community, essentially blackmailed and essentially caught under recording, saying some not so courteous things about African-American people, African-American players, Magic Johnson as well. And you know, obviously when that came out, it was an immediate uproar, because here you have it. Number one, he's the owner of a team that has a black head coach, has predominantly black players. His fan base is partially black. And here his comments about Magic Johnson, who essentially is the king of Los Angeles, you know, with a greater stature than Donald Sterling had. So I just thought that it just was the perfect storm for his removal, because you had players threatening not to play, you had the economic impact of boycotts and things of that nature. I felt like the pressure on the league was so immense that was, you know, the option that they came to was forcing Sterling to sell the team.
Right, absolutely. So the TMZ video came out on April 25th. Actually, right, today is the date we're recording, April 25th. Wow. And as you said, his girlfriend or mistress at the time was recording him. And he stated, and I quote here, because she posted a picture of herself with Magic Johnson, and Donald Sterling was very upset about it, says, and he quotes in the audio, "It bothers me a lot that you want to broadcast that you're associating with black people. You could sleep with them. You can bring them in. You can do whatever you want. The little that I ask you is not to bring them to my games." 5 days later, and I'm surprised in reading this, I was surprised it was so short, because I remember there was so much hoopla and talk about it. I thought it lasted forever. But it was a quick decision by NBA commissioner on April 29th, 2014, where they decided to announce that Sterling is banned from the NBA for life and fined $2.5 million, a maximum amount of fine. Silver stripped Sterling virtually of all authority over the Clippers and banned him from entering any Clippers facility. Silver stated, the commissioner stated, that he would be moving to force Sterling to sell the team based upon willful violations of the league rules, and so on and so forth. However, you know, we're going to dive into the legality in terms of removing an owner and what authority the commissioner would have to remove, because this is serious business. Because in all instances, aside from the racist remarks, you know, Donald Sterling was paying his players. He was running the franchise. He was hiring coaches. He was making trades, all things that, you know, the NBA teams would do. So in essence, he was actually doing his job. You know, in order to terminate an owner, Adam Silver would need to receive authority. The authority he would use would be Article 13, Article 14, Article 15 of the NBA Constitution and bylaws. And those bylaws, those sections really detail the grounds on how NBA owners' ownership may be terminated. Now, those grounds generally talk about, I think they're about 7 or 8. 3 of them talk about stuff involved with gambling, such as shaving points, getting a bookie, paying a gambler to, you know, bet on games and stuff like that, and betting in games itself. One would be to have not a team prepared, or have a team ready by the beginning of the season, or disbanding a season if or the ownership group becomes insolvent or bankrupt, you know, and you're not able to make payments or you owe too many creditors, then you could terminate that way. And you commit any kind of fraud or illegality as an organization, you're able to terminate, the league is able to terminate the ownership's ownership of the team. However, according to the Constitution, the action by Donald Sterling wasn't really covered under the grounds to terminate an owner. Now, generally, the take is that the commissioner is able to discipline anybody that commits an act that's detrimental to the league. However, the NBA's language is very specific, not to include that with the owners, but they did include that with the players. So how was it exactly that the NBA was able to have Donald Sterling removed from the NBA, from the league itself? Well, the NBA got very, very lucky. The Clippers team was actually in a family trust, and the trust was the Sterling Family Trust. And the head of that trust was Donald Sterling, in which he would make a lot of decisions regarding many of the assets that the family owns, which also includes the Los Angeles Clippers. But medical experts declared Donald Sterling mentally incapacitated. So when you're declared mentally incapacitated, it says that you do not have the judgment, and you're somewhat sick when you're not in the mental state to make right decisions that could affect a lot of your assets in a very impactful way. So next in line was Donald Sterling's wife, Shelley Sterling, I believe, to take over and make the decisions on what to do with the assets of the Sterling family, which includes, like I said, the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, she initially just wanted to stay with the NBA because owning an NBA team is a very prestigious thing to do and to have. But I think she was talked to by many of the NBA owners, including Adam Silver, to say, hey, listen, you know, your name right now is pretty mud, and I don't think anybody really wants to be associated with your family name. And we have a buyer that wants to buy this team for $2 billion. And you initially bought this team for about, I believe, $185 million. So it's a big profit, so it's in your favor to really make a big profit out of it and really take the cash and leave. And so she agreed and decided to sell the team. So at no point was actually terminated on grounds. It's just that luckily he was deemed mentally incapacitated. Now, Donald Sterling did sue the NBA and his wife for selling the team without his permission, but the case was thrown out in the immediacy of the court receiving and saying it was pretty frivolous, and you are deemed mentally incapacitated by the medical experts. So we have to remove. So the removal is sound. So, so in a way, you know, that's how the ownership was terminated, and that's the case there. So what do you think about that, CP?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, they were able to get off on that technicality, that he was, you know, mentally incapacitated and unable to you know, perform his duties. You know, as it pertains to Dolan, I think it's hard to see how the league, you know, would be able to step in and force him to do anything like that without evidence of you know, foul play or fraud or, you know, something that was morally corrupt or something like that. I mean, you know, I think when you ask around the league, players will tell you that they have respect for him, or former players will tell you that they have respect for him. You know, obviously the Oakley incident was a tough thing to see, but it wasn't illegal by any stretch. You know, it may not have been the best optics, but he was certainly well within his right to have him escorted from the premises. So I'm not sure you'll get a Sterling type exit for Dolan, but you know, you never know. Anything could happen, but
that's right, and that's a good assessment there. And next up, we're going to dive into George Steinbrenner and see if there's any precedent set there. Now, in 1990, the commissioner then for Major League Baseball, Faye Vincent, suspended George Steinbrenner, who was the owner of the Yankees, the late great George Steinbrenner, because he paid a gambler named Howard Spira to dig up dirt on Major League player Dave Winfield in an attempt to tamper the Winfield trade from the Yankees to the Angels. This was a no-no. This sounds very, very criminal and very below the table. And the commissioner stated that, you know, they have the power to investigate anything that is not in the interest of baseball. And Vincent could implement a fine up to $25,000 and suspend baseball personnel for a length of time at his discretion. Now, the current rules today state that, and I believe the rules are similar back then. I wasn't able to find any copies of bylaws that was available during 1990. So it's been amended and updated. But from what I understand, the rules are similar, except the fines have increased quite a deal. But according to Article 2, Section 3A of the Major League Baseball Constitution, it says in Section 3, in the case of conduct by Major League club owners, officers, employees, or players that is deemed by the commissioner not to be in the best interest of baseball, punitive action by the commissioner for each offense may include any one or more of the following: A, a reprimand; B, a deprivation of Major League club of representation in Major League meetings; a suspension or removal of any owner, officer, or employee of Major League club; or temporary or permanent ineligibility of a player; and a fine not to exceed $2 million in the case of a Major League club, and a fine not to exceed $500,000 in the case of an owner, officer, and the like. Now, the commissioner stated for his reason to suspend Steinbrenner is that Steinbrenner did something harmful to baseball, and he has to pay the price. He knew, or he should have known, that if a payment like that were exposed, it would bring disrepute to him and therefore to baseball. No commissioner can permit or encourage an owner to run his own investigation into a serious matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Major League office, and baseball has long forbidden the kind of association with a known gambler that permeates this case. Now, the impact of John Steinbrenner's suspension was that he was banned from attending, voting, or participating in any Major League meetings, making personnel decisions, and even owning 50% or more of the team stock. So he had to, you know, relinquish his rights to ownership over the team. Steinbrenner had to resign as general partner of the Yankees as well. Now, Vincent's ruling also banned Steinbrenner from attending games other than as a patron, where he could just buy a ticket and sit in the stands. So he couldn't receive any VIP treatment whatsoever. He had to sit in the stands like everybody else. Now, Steinbrenner accepted it. He knew what he did was wrong. He said he's happy with it and he's satisfied with the resolution. Now, 3 years later, he was allowed to come back into the ownership group of the New York Yankees, and he promised to not interfere with the management of the team. And a few years later, the Yankees dynasty was born. So do you remember that time and that era and where there was all this brouhaha with George Steinbrenner and the Yankees?
I mean, I was fairly young during that time. I was probably about 6 years old when he first got suspended. I mean, my earliest recollections was around, you know, say 93, 94 when the Yankees were actually playing. And by that time, you know, he was already reinstated. But yeah, I, you know, my father and my grandfather used to talk to me about that all the time when George was suspended from the team for trying to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield. But that's just who the boss was, man. And he was a unique, right. unique character and certainly an iconic figure in New York sports folklore. But yeah, no, another interesting period in our history in which, you know, an ownership standing with the league was tarnished to the point of you know, he almost was banned permanently. So, yeah, mm-hmm. certainly an interesting time.
Absolutely. Now, if these rules were in place for the NBA, where it says here that the commissioner is allowed to remove, major league personnel, such as an owner, then I feel that Donald Sterling's situation could have easily happened and he would have been removal, no problem. Because and still sticking with the Sterling situation, if the NBA would have taken this to court, it would have been dragged out, I believe. Now, there weren't contracts available to research for to see what exactly are in those contracts, what Donald Sterling have signed. So they may have signed something in their purchase that states a lot of morality clauses and the like. And, you know, hey, if you do anything that impacts our ability to actually promote and run the business of the league, then we could remove you. But that would have been very difficult to prove. If that wasn't really in the contract, but maybe or maybe not, the NBA would have had an easier time. But according to the documents that was available to the public, and it was not clear in the Constitution if that Constitution is the leading authority. But if they had Major League Baseball rules, it would have been simple 1-2-3 to just remove them because it was not in the best interest of baseball. Oh, however, though. As you stated before, it was blackmail that this call was recorded without Donald Sterling knowing. So, you know, how can you use something against somebody who didn't know that they were being recorded? You know, so that's something that you could take a look at. You know, it would have been different if Donald Sterling, you know, said those things, you know, while in public in an interview or something like that. So that would have been pretty bad. But as we go back to George Steinbrenner, you know, and Dolan, you know, and Donald Sterling, as we assess everything that we have read here, and I think you said it best earlier, you know, there may not be enough, or there isn't enough really to remove Dolan from the ownership of the Knicks, because number one, you know, the action by Dolan does not affect the bottom line of the Knicks, and not even affect the bottom line of the NBA as a whole. Number two, the NBA Constitution does not grant the commissioner broad authority over the owner as it does over the players. And being that the owners make the rules, I don't think they would make any rules that may jeopardize their own interest. And Donald Sterling was known as the worst owner in the league for years because he berated his own players, never invested in the talent, and so his team were in a perpetual rebuild, and he was still able to keep his team. Now, Dolan is no Sterling. You know, he's, from what I've seen so far, he's not a racist. He's not. In fact, he gives a lot of black people high executive jobs, and he does look out for his players. You know, he does spend. He spends. You know, you gotta give Dolan that. He spends on his team. He invests in his teams. But like you said, he may have put his trust and his faith in the wrong people. So I think that we can conclude that Dolan is here to stay unless he commits something very, very criminal. Or unless the NBA Constitution decides to change things make it easier to removal if the owner does something that might be detrimental to the league. However, his actions have not really impacted the league in negatively at all. I mean, as bad as the Knicks are, the NBA is still thriving. The Knicks are the most valuable team in the NBA and the most valuable franchises in all of sports. So he is here to stay. So hopefully, you know, Leon Rose could really, you know, lead forward and build a good team and really give Dolan a really good team that I think the Knicks fan base deserves. And I think it'll be good for him, too, after these past 20 years. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, what is basically going to be at the end of the day. I mean, if you're still going to be a fan of this team, you're just going to have to understand that James Dolan is going to be the owner of this team for the foreseeable future. But at the same time, the NBA is such that it's a players league, and you win championships with talented players. And that's, you know, with luck in the draft, or if you get lucky in free agency where you get a franchise changing player. Those players come few and far between. And that's why it's very hard to win a championship in the NBA. It's the hardest league in all of sports to win a championship. So it's just what it is. But at the same time, you know, with MSG stock now being split off, the split up between the sports and entertainment company being separate entities now that you can invest in, there still is speculation that one day he could sell the team. You know, right now the Knicks and the Rangers have a combined worth of around $7 billion. So they've split that out from the entertainment side of things. So let's see. Let's see. I mean, maybe once this team turns things around and business picks back up, you know, maybe in a few years we're talking about a different owner of the New York Knicks. But for now, it's going to be James Dolan.
Yeah, for now, it is James Dolan. And I would be remiss as a New York Knicks fan, and I ask you a few questions about the current roster. So what do you think about the Knicks kids? Like, what's your assessment of Frank Ntilikina, Kevin Knox, RJ Barrett, and Mitchell Robinson, and anybody else? Like, what do you think of these guys?
Sure. So I think right now the two players I look most forward to building with are RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. I thought RJ had a pretty good rookie year. You know, he certainly showed some flashes. He had some solid games. Getting to the basket at will seemed to be his strength. Finishing, shooting, and free throws weren't. But I thought you saw some spark in RJ as a capable playmaker out there, a very smart player, a capable defender. And I thought he had some really good moments for us this year. Mitchell Robinson, obviously another solid piece that we picked up 2 years ago in the second round. I think Mitch really picked it up close to the second half and beyond, where you saw him playing a lot more disciplined basketball and even borderline dominant. You saw in certain spurts from Mitch. So that was certainly
leads the league in field goal percentage right now, right?
Leads the league in field goal percentage right now at 74%. If the league does not resume, that will be his record. So like I said, I'm certainly happy to see how Mitch is growing. They've given credit to Mike Miller for that. I'm not sure if Mike Miller will be the coach going forward, but they've given credit to Mike Miller for his development. As far as Kevin Knox, you know, this year was a down year for Kevin Knox. He regressed from his rookie year, which in itself wasn't that spectacular. And so I think there is a concern with Kevin Knox in terms of what he can truly mature to, because he has struggled. He struggled with his shooting. He struggled on the defensive end. And this year, with less minutes due to the free agency influx, his overall involvement in the offense has dipped as well. You know, they had him using him a lot less as a primary ball handler in the pick and roll. So you saw his utilization also dip. So that's a concern. But at the same time, I think Kevin Knox is very young. He's only 20 years old. And so I think as a fan base, we have to be patient. But, you know, what's concerning is that he's going to be playing for likely his third coach in 3 years coming next season. So, they have to focus on a proper development structure for these kids and give them an environment that they can truly succeed in. Lastly, Frank, I think Frank again had some peaks and valleys this year. He has to prove that he can stay durable. His shot, once again, was a bit erratic this year. But with Frank, you can rely on his defense. You can rely on him making smart plays. I thought he showed you in certain games, he gave you a spark as a pick and roll playmaker. And so I thought Frank had his sparks and his day in the sun this season as well. So again, I look at Frank, I look at Kevin Knox as role players right now in this team that we have to continue to invest in and in their development, because I think the opportunity costs are not that great. I don't think you're going to get much value for them on a trade market. So I think you're much better off trying to develop those players and seeing if they can continue to gain chemistry with RJ and Mitch and whoever they draft this offseason. And so they can really start building a young core.
Oh, absolutely. And hopefully Leon gets the right executives in front office together. And hopefully gets the right coach. Might be Mike Miller, might not be, but we'll see. But CP, thank you so much for your input. I appreciate you. Again, I'm a big fan of your show. Keep doing what you're doing. I will continue to follow. And anybody who wants to follow the show, Hot Law Podcast, you can find me on Google Music, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, on all podcast platforms. And please, if you're a Knicks fan or a sports fan in general, check out Knicks Fan TV on YouTube. It's the best sports channel for the fans, by the fans, you'll ever have and ever see. So thank you, CP, again for joining me.
Max, thanks a lot, man. I had a great time. And once again, please be safe out there. And anytime you want to do this again, just keep me posted.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining, guys. And I'll see you later. Holla at your boy.